Welcome to Healthy Mom, Healthy Baby Tennessee, a podcast brought to you by the Tennessee Initiative for Perinatal Quality Care. TIPQC exists to improve health outcomes for mothers and infants in Tennessee through our quality collaborative that will identify opportunities to optimize maternal and infant outcomes across our state and is funded under a grant contract with the state of Tennessee. The Healthy Mom, Healthy Baby Tennessee podcast is designed for medical professionals and for patients and families across the state. We will focus on all aspects of the perinatal period with special attention to reducing our maternal mortality rate. This podcast is brought to you through a cooperative agreement with the Alliance for Innovation on Maternal Health.
Welcome to the Healthy Mom, Healthy Baby Tennessee podcast, brought to you by the Tennessee Initiative for Perinatal Quality Care. My name is Patty Scott, and I am the TIPQC Infant Quality Improvement Specialist. We are so excited to have Efat Welson from the Tennessee Language Center joining us today. Let me tell you a little bit about Efat. She was born in Egypt and has proudly called Nashville her home since 2007. She has a background in psychology and early childhood education, devoting her career to fostering language access and educational support for diverse communities. Since 2014, Efat has worked with the Metro Nashville Public Schools, first as a parent outreach translator, and later as an exceptional education interpreter and translator specialist, supporting students with special needs. Additionally, she is a certified medical interpreter and an adult ESL teacher, earning certifications in both medical and educational interpreting. Efat is passionate about building bridges through language and helping her community thrive. We are so honored to have you join us today. We're excited for you to enhance our understanding of the Arab culture and explore strategies for providing respectful care to those families. Thank you for joining us. Welcome.
Thank you so much. It's an honor to be with you. I'm glad to be here and speak about our culture. Thank you.
Well, I've got a few questions for you. First, tell us about yourself in your own words and how you got involved in this work.
Since I come to the United States, I used to help the people in our community asking me. They figured out that I kind of know English. So they used to bring documents and ask me, what does it mean? So I used to translate it for them and help anybody as a friendly way and voluntarily. But then I heard about the interpretation positions and the job and the career itself. But I didn't know where to start until one day one of my friends at the church, she told me that there is an opening in Metro Nashville Public Schools. So I applied and it was my first step into this career. And through the years, I started to develop myself and earning more certifications and trainings until I became what I am right now.
Well, we are glad you did. We're glad you pursued that.
Thank you.
Can you tell us a little bit more about the Arab culture and the Arabic language's prevalence in Tennessee?
Yes, sure. All around the world, we have around 25 Arabic dialects, but in Tennessee specifically, we have 5 large Arabic communities, and the Coptic Egyptian Christian is the largest community here in Tennessee. And after the Egyptian community, you will find 4 more Arab communities. We have the Levantines Arabic, like Syrians, Palestinians, Jordanians, Lebanese. And then the third one is Iraqi Arabic. And they speak the Sorani Badini and Sorani Kurdish. And after that, the Sudanese. And lastly, the least community is the Yemenis. And we consider the Egyptian dialect is number one in Tennessee, and actually in the whole entire world because of the spread of the Egyptian media all over the Middle East. So everybody can understand the Egyptian dialect. So that's why we consider our community is number one in Tennessee.
Thank you. What are some of the unique challenges that Arab-speaking families face in the healthcare system?
In my opinion, I can tell that there are 3 major challenges facing Arab people and here in Tennessee. The first one is the language barriers and the differences. because it's increasing the risk of the medication errors, especially the incorrect dosage or the administration of the medication. As we said that we have many dialects in Arabic, and even with providing interpretation services, the errors are still there. So we usually say to the providers, when you request an interpreter, you must confirm first to the dialect of the patients, so you can provide the very accurate dialect and the interpreter who can actually interpret everything accurately and completely, and the patient can understand everything. The second challenge is the use of the medical terms or jargons. Sometimes the providers use some technical terms or some medical jargons, and it's so difficult for the patients to understand these terms even after the interpreter interprets the terms. It's still high level for them, and they don't understand. That's why we usually ask the provider to check the understanding of the patient from time to time and see if they completely understand everything, and check if they need more clarification. The third challenge I see that it's cultural and religious considerations. So when we deal with the Arab people, we usually need to keep in our mind 3 points. The first one, the beliefs about the illness and the treatments, because all the Arab people, they believe that illness and everything is from God. It's like a test for our patience and test for our faith in God. Second, the stigma and the mental health awareness is the biggest issue, because most of the Arab people, they are reluctant to seek the professionals to help, specifically for the mental health, and they mask the symptoms, and because they prefer the somatic medications over the psychotherapy, because they think that it's like a shame to appear like a weak with mental issues. So we usually mask in the symptoms to try to avoid the diagnosis with any mental health, mental issues. So they need to be aware of the problem, and we ask the providers to be patient with them and explain to them that it's not wrong to be diagnosed with something, like, for example, the depression, specifically for the latest postpartum depression. They need clarification that it's okay. Most of the ladies or some of the ladies have the same situation, and this is the only way to be treated. The third point that we need to put in our minds that the lack of culture competence. We need the providers to be aware of the specific sensitivities, the culture sensitivity, and the needs of the beliefs of the Arabic patients.
So, Aoife, I want to understand the first sentence that you said for a little bit better. So Arab people feel like when they get sick, it's a challenge or a test from God on their strength. Did I understand that correctly?
Yes, they think that it's kind of a test from God to see how patient are they and how faithful to God are they.
In Ramadan, isn't Ramadan similar to that? Isn't that also supposed to be a display of their faith?
Ramadan is like a mandatory month, fasting month for all the Muslim Arabic speakers. And let me clarify something, that the Arabic speakers are not only Muslims. We have Christians and Muslims, and each one of them, they have specific days for fasting and specific ways of fasting. For the Ramadan, it's a month that they can get closer relationship with God through fasting and prayers. And they are fasting from sunrise to sunset. And after that, they can eat and drink until the second sunrise. But during this period of time, from the sunrise to sunset, they are forbidden from eating or drinking anything. It's completely strict fasting. And the goal of it is just to get closer to God.
So a test of their faith. That's interesting. During the pregnancy, if we have a mom that also has hypertension or diabetes, those are illnesses. If they feel like that's a test of their faith and they're also pregnant, so we're taking care of them, is there anything we can do to support them with those disease processes and recognizing their faith?
No, related to the faith, there is nothing to do because they believe that if they cured and healed, it's from God and it's a bliss. If they are not cured or not healed, okay, so we are still in the period of testing and we can undergo to the treatments and take the medications as the doctors say. Because one thing, let me tell you that all the Arabs look at the providers and the doctors as a high authority since they are the people who understand everything about the medical issues and the medications. So whenever they say, okay, this is your situation, this is your diagnosis, and you need to take this treatment, so we accept it and we say, okay, we will take it. But the result, if we cured or not cured, we always believe that it's in the hand of God and it's according to His willing.
That's very interesting. And what a responsibility that they trust medical professionals so much. That's wonderful. Are there any commonly held beliefs or customs that our listeners should know when they're taking care of Arab patients in labor and delivery, postpartum, or in the nurseries, whether it's newborn nursery or the newborn intensive care unit? Do you have any hints for us for those patients?
Yes. As I told you, that religious is playing a big role in our life and our belief is number one. So anything that's happening to us, whatever, if it's there is complication during the pregnancy or during the delivery, we usually seek prayers first and praying to God and ask the relatives to pray for us. And then we say, okay, let it go, whatever. So the belief comes number one. We always believe that being healthy or giving birth to a healthy baby or not healthy baby, it's all in God's hand. And we accept it as it is. For the complications during the pregnancy, you can explain to the patients what is the complications and what are the treatments and any other options and the side effect of any treatments or medications and let them decide it. We usually also, sometimes we don't make a decision right away, right now, and we prefer to discuss it with some other people in the family. Because we believe of the unity of the family and we make a decision together, especially if it's related to the future child. So the family has to take a role and share the responsibilities. Also for the hands, for the Christian people, we don't mind about using hands, whether right or left hands. But for the Muslim people, they prefer using the right hand more because they consider the left hand like unclean. So if you're giving a medication or doing any procedures, try to use your right hand. But of course, if you need to use both hands, obviously there is no way you have to use. But if you can go in to provide them documents or medications or anything, it's preferred to use the right hand. Let's say for the privacy and dressing, we all Arab people, we love privacy and we do not like to expose our body to anybody, even for the doctor. So that's why we always say, choose the same gender provider to check on the patient and do the procedures and everything, if as much as possible. I know there is that some situations, it's so hard to find the same gender, a female doctor to take care of the patient. But in this case, if it's hard to find the same gender, you can at least keep another employee or another staff that's female or one of the family members with the patient in the room so she feels comfortable. Also, when you try to expose their bodies or if you want them, for example, to take off their shirt, we usually take off our shirt for only the certain area that you want to check on it. So if you ask me to put it over more, we feel reluctant to do it, unless it's necessary. There is a huge reason. Also, if you notice that, you will see that most of the patients refuse to wear the gowns because it's open from the front or from the back. And we prefer to bring our clothes with us to wear it after the delivery in the room. When we go back to the room, we wear our fluffy and white clothes. I prefer it more than gowns. Also for shaking hands, for the Christian patients, you can shake hands normally, but for the Muslim ladies, specifically if you observe someone with a scarf, some of them, if it's a short scarf, you know that some of them may shake hands. But if it's long scarf and covering their face, you know that they don't shake hands at all or do a eye contact with any other ex-gender provider. It has to be the same gender provider. Some of our beliefs about the adoption also, for Christian, we don't mind to adopt the children, but for the Muslim peoples, they don't give the name of the family to that adopted child unless he is breastfeeded. If he is not breastfeeded and adopted like over 2 years old, they just consider it like he is a part of the family, but he is not in the inheritance. And it's kind like a mercy work or a good deed for that child. For the abortion, it's prohibited. We do not allow any abortion unless if it's happened during a rape or if it's a threatening to the mother's life, then we accept the abortion. But rather than this, it's forbidden. Even if you tell us, if you come and tell me the child is going to be born with a disability or genetic or a deficit in any way, I say, okay, I want him. I will take care for him. Because we accept that being conceived with a child, it's a bliss from God, whatever the child is. Another thing about our thoughts about the birth control and the facilitation, for example, we accept it, but under certain circumstances, we do not accept the long-term birth control unless the mother say that, okay, that's it, I'm not conceived anymore, I'm not thinking to bring any children, to give birth to any children anymore. Then we accept that one.
How can healthcare providers take food-related practices into account, such as halal? Did I say that right, Yvette?
Halal.
Halal, I'm so sorry. Requirements or fasting during religious observances when we're planning our treatment. How can we be respectful of those food-related practices?
Okay, when it comes to the food, we have to make like two sections. First section for the Christians, we will go for this category first because it's much easier. For the Christian, they can, non-fasting days, they can eat anything. There is no restricted food or anything. But during fasting days, we have two type of fastings. We have the strict fasting that has only, the diet consisted only the vegetables, the fruits, and the beans, nothing else. No meats, no dairy products, no animal products. But the second kind of fasting, the same thing, but we add fish. We eat fish, vegetables, fruits, and beans. And the same thing, no meats, no chickens, no dairy productions. Rather than that, that's okay. And the people who are exempted from fasting, the people who are very, very sick that they cannot pass a day without eating protein and meat, and the young children younger than 7 years old, they are exempted. But if they want to fast, it's okay. And the elderly who cannot fast at all with major problems. These are the Christian people, and they don't have any restrictions for the medications as well. They can take any medications that's provided by the doctor. And as long as it's a certain schedule, we are permitted to take the medication as scheduled from the doctor. The second section is Muslims, and it's very restricted. And specifically in their fasting days, in the regular days, the only restriction that they don't eat any food that is invoked without Allah's names. It has to be slaughtered on the Allah's names. They don't eat anything that contains pork or alcohol or any of these productions that contains gelatin also. They usually eat with the right hand, and because as we said before, that they consider it a clean hand. During the fasting of Ramadan, as we said, they fasting from the sunrise to sunset without any food or drink. Also, there is a restrictions for the medication. They cannot take any pills that contains animal products. They cannot take or buy any medications that contains pork or alcohol. So when you give them treatments, you try to make sure that it doesn't have any pork or alcohol or gelatin productions. But only in a certain very, very hard situations that if there is no way, this is the only medication that has one of these productions, you can explain to the patients that this is the only option and let them decide if they want to take it or not. Also, make sure to schedule the medications and the times away from the sunrise to sunset during Ramadan, because some of them, even if they are sick and so tired and they are allowed to break the fasting, but they still willing to fast and restrict with their fasting. For the pregnant woman and the breastfeeding woman, they can break the fasting and refast again during the year after the month finished.
Thank you. Finally, we know that all of our teams are committed to providing respectful care for all patients. What steps can healthcare professionals take to create a welcoming and respectful environment for Arab patients?
I have some tips here to help you work with them. First, when you greet the patient, greet them with their title, like Miss Fulana or Mr. Fulan. Also, if you want to warm up with them to gain their trust, you can share a small information about yourself to make like a friendly relationship with them and gain their trust so they can tell you exactly what symptoms and everything that they have. Because sometimes we feel shy to expose ourselves and the information about our personal information, or not a personal information like a name or address, but what we have. If you ask, for example, about the level of the pain on a scale of 1 to 10, what is it, the level of if your pain? We usually tolerate the pain. So when we say it's 3, actually it's not 3. It might be 6 or 7. But because we tolerate the pain, so we reduce the amount so we don't appear like we are weak. We usually like to appear like we are strong. We tolerate the pain. So, but if someone tells you it's 10 out of 10, it's extremely painful. So sometimes it takes like a time from us to warm with the provider to tell them everything that we have and all the medications that we take. And that makes like a barriers between the patient and the provider. Also, it's a good thing if you have inpatient in the room after the birth. It's good to knock the door first before you open and enter and wait for 30 seconds, because some of the Arab Muslim ladies, they wear the hijab. If they are staying by themselves in the room, they want to feel comfortable, so they take it off. But if someone comes in, you have to take them time so they can put it again. Also, we sometimes it's so embarrassing to breastfeed the child in front of others. So it's a good chance also if she is breastfeeding the child. So you give her a time to cover herself and get ready for you to come in. Also, double check with the patient if he has the intention to follow the medication, the instructions, and take the medications. Because sometimes we say, yes, we will do whatever you want. We will take whatever you provide to us, and we follow it for a certain times, and then we stop because we feel that we are better and we just need to rest so we will recover. We don't have the idea that we have to finish all the dose and all the course of the medication. We just take it until we feel fine and then we stop. So it's a good idea if you explain to the patient how important it is to finish all the course of the medication. One more thing I want to add for the Christian people, if you tell them that the child is about to die, we have faith in God that anything it's in his hand. But if you tell me that the child is going to die, we usually ask a permission to baptize the child before he dies, to make sure that he's a Christian and at the end, he's going to the heaven as our beliefs. So make sure first to discuss it with the parents and tell them if there is a possibility that he's going to live or die, and accept his idea if they want to baptize a child.
That's a lot of good advice. Thank you.
Thank you.
What should patients and families that might be listening also want to know? What advice would you give them as they advocate for their needs?
I would like to tell them that do not hesitate to speak up and express yourself and express your needs and your concerns, and be open-minded when you speak to the provider and disclose all your problems in order for them to give you the accurate diagnosis and accurate medication.
Saying that, and then what you said earlier about making sure that we use interpreters that have the same dialect, that speak the same dialect as the family, those are really good points as far as patient safety and preventing medication errors. I'm glad you talked about that. Is there anything else you'd like to add before we wrap up?
I would just like to thank you for providing me this chance to speak about our community, and thank you for trying to understand their fears and trying to be open-minded about our culture and the Arab people. Thank you.
Thank you for being willing to share your time and your expertise, because we very much do want to learn how to take care of all our families and be respectful of their needs medically, socially, religiously, in all ways. Thank you.
At any time, thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Healthy Mom, Healthy Baby Tennessee, presented by TIPQC. TIPQC is funded under a grant contract with the state of Tennessee. Healthy Mom, Healthy Baby Tennessee is brought to you through a cooperative agreement with the Alliance for Innovation on Maternal Health. Do you have ideas for a future guest or topic, or even have a question you would like answered on upcoming episodes? Visit www.tipqc.org, that's TIPQC.org, and click on podcast to submit suggestions and questions to our podcast team. Make sure to subscribe to our podcast to be the first to know when new episodes are available, and find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube to stay in the loop with our active projects and other relevant news relating to perinatal health in Tennessee.